Hi, this is Debbie Voiles, coach at Mojo for Running with podcast number 68, Shin Splints. I'll describe the symptoms, what causes them, how to avoid them, what to do if you're already suffering from shin splints, and what will likely happen if you have shin splints and keep on running. Now, I'm not a physician nor a medical professional. I have done considerable research. I've experienced shin splints several times myself, and I have worked with runners, many runners, who were coping with shin splints. I'll present information here from many reputable sources, and I will link to the primary source in the show notes. More on that in a few minutes. First, I have a big announcement. My beginner runner program has finally launched. Now, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that the Mojo for Running podcast is for runners of all levels and with all goals. But I do have a second podcast for people just embarking on their running journey, and that is the Beginner Runner Village podcast. Associated with that, I have a new membership program for beginner runners, runners that are at the very beginning of their running career, or maybe they haven't even run at all yet. It's on the Mojo for Running website. If you go to that website, you can click the programs button in the menu bar, and it's right there. If any of you listeners have friends or relatives just starting to run, or friends or relatives who think they might like to run if they found the right, slow, gradual program, please tell them about my beginner runner program. It starts them off with mostly walking and just 15 steps of running segments. Please, people who thought they could never become runners will find that even they feel comfortable and empowered by such a gradual program. The hallmark of this program is that it's incredibly slow in progression. Here's my philosophy. I think about the fact that most of us who've been running for a while are perfectly comfortable when we're out running several miles or many miles at a time. We're not usually running hard. If you've listened to my podcast for a while, you know I recommend running 80% of your miles, at least, at a conversational, comfortable pace. We all know that's one of the reasons why we can get ourselves back out there to do it every day. It's not a stressful situation. We enjoy it. We're not huffing and puffing. We're talking to our friends. We're actually talking in complete sentences, which is the definition of running an easy run, because we're running at a conversational pace. Here's the thing. Beginner runners tend to run too hard. They tend to be trying to do too much too soon. They don't get to run at a conversational pace in most beginner runner programs. That's how mine's different. I think everything's relative. I don't want them to work any harder, to have to expend any more effort than we do. So to keep it at that easy intensity, I have them doing 95% walking and just a little bit running, and then we build it up incredibly gradually. I know a lot of people are runners, and they have a spouse or family members who they would really love to see start to run. Take a look at this program, because what I have found with some of my local runners is that they have been able to entice their spouses to partake in it because they look at it and they see, wow, this really is easy. I get to walk almost all the time and just run a little bit. And then each week I just add a few steps more running to the running segments. When they see how doable it is, and once they've done it a week, they become convinced that, hey, I can do this. Most people who want to become runners are not in a big hurry. It's more important for them to believe they can do it. If it takes a while, they don't mind that. In fact, they're fine with that. For more experienced runners, within the next couple of weeks, I'll be launching three more programs on the Mojo for Running website. A first 5K program, which picks up where the beginner runner program leaves off. A first 10K program that picks up where that one leaves off, and a first half marathon program that picks up where the first 10K program leaves off. Each will include a detailed weekly training schedule that includes stretching, strengthening, and cross training, as well as access to a closed Facebook group just for people in that program. Each is a 12-week program, and the fee is, at this time, $27 per month for 3 months, with a 30-day money-back guarantee. I have an email sign-up button on the new Mojo for Running website. Please sign up there, and I'll send an occasional newsletter. And by that, I mean like probably quarterly. I'm not into sending a lot of newsletters because I'm too busy putting out the podcasts and running the program. But I will send out an announcement when each program opens. You can also contact me by messaging me via the Mojo for Running Facebook page. Now to our topic for today, shin splints. Even non-runners know about shin splints. You most likely know exactly what I'm talking about if you've been running very long. Generally speaking, it's pain on the front of the leg between the knee and the foot. Key here is that when I refer to shin splints, I mean pain in the front of the leg or just to the side of the front between the knee and the foot. Technically, or maybe I should say anatomically, a shin splint occurs when the muscles on the front of the shin become torn away from the bone. This causes varying degrees of discomfort, but may be excruciatingly painful. The onset can be different, and the level of discomfort may be different, depending on severity, individuality, and perhaps cause. The technical term for shin splints is medial tibial stress syndrome. The tibia is the larger leg bone between the knee and the foot. It surprised me when I started to research this topic that if you listen to 6 different medical experts, tell what causes shin splints in their opinion, how to treat them, how to prevent them, you will find at least 6 different answers. And each one seems to be sure she or he has exactly the correct answer rather than recognizing that shin splints can be triggered by various behaviors and may need either a variety of treatments or may respond better to one treatment than another. It's not an exact science either, because, as with many running injuries, probably most, it's likely that sometimes we attribute improvement or cure to some activity or treatment due to timing of improvement, when it could be that that specific treatment happened to coincide with the body's own recovery. After all, most injuries will resolve on their own if you just rest them long enough. Similarly, there are plenty of people recommending different things to prevent shin splints, but maybe some people are predisposed by either their body type or gait or physiology, and others, on the other hand, would never get shin splints no matter what they did. You could spend hours watching YouTube videos of experts telling you how to prevent or treat shin splints. I'll address each facet, causes, symptoms, treatment, and prevention, and provide a summary of all the information I have found from a wide variety of sources offering their potential treatment advice and prevention guidelines, and I'll provide links to whole articles and videos in the show notes. Let me address one point of confusion that's going to come up. I think when most people say they have shin splints, they mean they have pain in the front of their lower leg, but a more technical definition would be muscles pulled away from the bone, or a stress reaction, or a stress fracture, all of which could be the cause of that pain. If you have shin splints, perhaps I'll mention the one treatment you haven't tried, or the one method of prevention that will help you avoid a recurrence. I sure hope so. First, some definitions of shin splints. From the Mayo Clinic website, shin splints are caused by repetitive stress on the shin bone and the connective tissues that attach your muscles to the bone. From WebMD, irritated and swollen muscles, often from overuse, stress fractures, which are tiny breaks in the lower leg bones, overpronation, or flat feet, when the impact of a step makes your foot's arch collapse. Okay, here are the causes, and you'll be amazed at how many things could actually bring on shin splints. Running downhill, either when not properly trained on hills or running downhill with reckless abandon, meaning without proper control due to lack of strength or poor form, or suddenly increasing mileage or doing too much mileage too soon. This is why shin splints are particularly common among newer runners. Or from beginning to do speed work and not being adjusted to it yet. Or from running strenuous off-road trails when unaccustomed to them, or from running a longer distance than usual, or from tight muscles, or from a muscle imbalance between the muscles of the calf and the muscles of the front of the leg, or from running with shoes, from running with toes lifted or tensed, or from wearing the wrong shoes, or from running with barefoot shoes when not properly conditioned, or from poor running form, or from running many miles on a slanted road surface, or from running on a hard surface when not conditioned to it, or simply from wearing shoes that have too many miles on them. I remember early in my running career, and that means in the late 70s, I always wore the same model of New Balance shoes, and I knew when to replace them when I started to get shin splints. I'd buy new shoes, and voila, no more discomfort. That was an easy fix. That doesn't happen to me anymore, I think due to the fact that with improved strength and running form, I don't require that same level of shoe-provided cushioning. I do wear highly cushioned shoes, but I stopped having that issue many years before my current affection for highly cushioned shoes. I've worn minimalist shoes without getting shin splints, so I suspect it's the improved form and strength. Another time when I got severe, excruciating shin pain was when I did a half marathon trail race. I had had no discomfort whatsoever prior to the race, but the pain in my shins was so bad the next day that I could barely walk. Obviously, the pain was not caused by pounding since I was on a soft surface. In that case, it was the hills that I had not properly trained for, combined with muscles that were just too tight. That was just 2 weeks before a marathon. I saw a podiatrist who determined that it was definitely not a stress fracture. He said, "Just take it easy for a few weeks. As long as you don't have any big races coming up, you'll be fine." This was on a Tuesday. Yikes, I thought. Sheepishly, I said, "I've got the Marine Corps Marathon a week from this coming Sunday." "Oh," he said, "then I'm going to send you to see a great physical therapist for some daily physical therapy, and we'll see what happens." That was when I met Jeremy Maddox, a doctor of physical therapy here in Tampa. Jeremy determined that my lower leg was extremely tight and prescribed two stretching exercises, each to be held for 2 minutes and to be done daily. He also worked on my ankle joints, which he said were extremely constricting. I did that marathon, and I had absolutely no pain in my shins on race day. That was a good outcome. And by the way, I've never had that same pain again. Now I just do those stretches that he taught me 3 times a week, and I only hold them about 30 seconds each. That's for maintenance. He had me hold it for a long time originally because the muscles needed to be stretched. A side note here, another lesson I learned back then was not to do a half marathon 2 weeks before a marathon, particularly if the race is off-road and the marathon will be on-road. That was definitely a rookie mistake. It seemed reasonable because my schedule called for 12 miles, but I had not been running trails much due to marathon training, and the trails were too strenuous, tiring out my legs, which is the last thing you want to do when you're tapering. I had an okay race, but I will never know how much better it could have been. So those are some, hopefully, most of the causes of shin splints, and the causes, in some cases, point to the possible solutions, which we'll get to. What to do if you have shin splints? Well, the single most important thing is to determine whether the pain is caused by a stress fracture or not. If you already have a stress fracture, your only intelligent option is to stop running. If you don't have any important races on the horizon, you can take some time off of running. If you can't get to a doctor for whatever reason, just stop running. Seriously, if it's a stress fracture, you'll just make it worse. And if it's a stress reaction, which means the bone is stressed and it could easily become a stress fracture, then running on it will guarantee it becomes a fracture, which will cause you to miss much more time running. Your physician can probably tell you whether it's a stress fracture just by examination. However, x-rays do not show, just keep in mind that x-rays do not show stress fractures until the fracture is already starting to heal. But your doctor will probably do one anyway, maybe because they're convenient to do, usually in the doctor's office, and maybe because some insurance companies may require that before allow or before approving more expensive tests such as an MRI or a bone scan. Anyway, if it is a stress fracture or a stress reaction, you need to stop running immediately. I know you'll hate to do this if you don't know that it's a stress fracture, but that's a chance you don't want to take because it means even more time off from running. A stress fracture will mean 6 to 8 weeks off and maybe considerably more. If you keep going back and trying to run when you have a stress fracture, each time you try to run, you're prolonging the healing process. Taking off a couple of weeks early on can save you and have you back to running much, much sooner. So my first suggestion, and this is really important, is you have got to find out if you have a stress fracture when you have pain in the front of your shin before you do anything else. There may be lots of things you can do as far as treatment if you just have sore shins, but if you have a stress fracture, you need to follow doctor's orders. Treatment. Now, this is not for if you have a stress fracture. This is for if you have soreness. 1, foam rolling and the stick. 2 of my favorite pieces of equipment. I'll link to several videos showing how to use both. The foam roller is a 1 to 3 foot long piece of hard foam, and it's about 6 inches in diameter. It's great for self-massage. Also, the stick, which is a brand name, The Stick, is a device that's about 1 foot or a little more long and is slightly flexible. It's about 1 inch in diameter, and it's got rings that spin around the shaft as you roll it up and down your legs. When you use either of these devices, make sure you don't roll on the bone. You want to be on the side of the top of your leg. Make sure you're rolling on the meaty part where the muscle is. That's what you want to be working. 2, ice. Now, there's a lot of debate in running circles about when to ice and whether to ice anymore, but many people are still recommending freezing a small paper cup with ice in it. Then you can tear off the edge of the cup and massage that area that gets sore. 3, stretch. Here, there are basically 3 stretches that are particularly important for this area. 1 is a wall lean. That's when you lean against the wall. You put your feet are about shoulder width apart, and you lean with your arms. You put your arms out and lean on a wall. You lean into it so that the back of your legs get a good stretch. Then you stay in the same position, but you bend your knees. By bending your knees, it means that you have a stretch at the lower part of the back of your leg, the lower part of your calf. That's a whole different area. Very important to stretch both of those areas. A third stretch is when you you have your knee, the area of your leg from your knee to the tip of your toes, flat on the floor, and you're sitting down, you might say sitting on your haunches. Now, you want to ease into this. Don't do anything that causes pain to your shins. Don't do anything that hyperextends your knee or your ankle, but if you're comfortable in this position, just stretch it out that way. You can find examples of this, again, in those videos. But in this case, you're stretching out the front of your ankle. You just relax and keep that. And you can also do this by just sitting in a chair and straightening out your foot, pointing your toe, and just holding it that way for a little bit. And that'll also stretch it out. And, of course, you're not putting any more tension on it than you want to. With any stretches, remember, you never want anything to hurt. You just want to stretch until you feel a nice little stretch. But don't ever make anything hurt. All stretches should be gentle. 4, strengthen. You'll do well to strengthen all your muscles. You might be surprised that strengthening your core will help, even because a stronger core means less stress on the legs and makes improved form possible. Do work diligently on strengthening the legs and the feet, though. 5, form. Eliminate any overstriding in your gait. When you overstride, meaning to plant your foot in front of your center of gravity, you're using the part of your leg between your knee and foot as a fulcrum to pull your body up and over, putting much more stress on your lower leg. If you plant your foot right under your body, you'll likely land on a very stable whole foot platform, and you'll be on the downward part of your stride already, immediately unloading the stress on your lower leg. 6. Concentrate on making sure the muscles of your leg are in balance. Many people have powerful calves but weak front leg muscles. Work on that. 7. Massage. You'll find many examples in the show notes of physical therapists demonstrating how to massage the muscles involved. Plus, I always recommend periodic full-body therapeutic sports massage. This will help tremendously with improved form and relieving tightness. A good massage therapist will help you identify tight areas that you can then work on yourself with the foam roller and the stick. 8, evaluate your shoes, whether they're worn and whether they're the best shoes for you to be wearing. 9, compression calf sleeves. These are not a gimmick, especially for new runners or for anyone who's having trouble or problems with their shins. I would wear them for all your runs until the problem completely subsides, at least. But of course, compression calf sleeves alone is certainly not going to fix the problem. 10, kinesio taping. When I had a stress fracture to my tibia, the location where they most often occur, by the way, after 3 months, an x-ray showed the bone was completely healed, but the pain lasted for months after that. A different doctor of physical therapy, Eric Schweitzer, showed me how to tape it. I did, and that definitely helped me with the nagging pain. I would tape the spot, as he demonstrated, and then put my calf sleeves over that. He also showed me that I was overstriding. Not much, but enough to make it hurt just a little bit more. Now, I knew better than to overstride, of course, but as I've said before, self-awareness is not very accurate, and I am not immune from that. He shot video of me running on a treadmill, and the video does not lie. I worked on that, and it helped as well. Now, let's talk about prevention. You can probably guess how to prevent shin splints based on the treatments, but I'll provide a short list here still. 1. Avoid muscle imbalance. 2. Run with good form. 3. Stretch. Enough, but not too much. Remember, being too flexible is as much of a problem as being too tight. But if you have shin splints, there's a good chance you will benefit from the stretches described above. But be careful to do dynamic stretches before exercising and only do the static stretches I mentioned above when you're warmed up. 4. Get regular deep tissue massages and use the stick and foam roller daily. 5. Avoid sudden increases in mileage or intensity. 6. Learn hill running technique and apply it. 7. Avoid suddenly doing more miles on harder surfaces. Ease into it. 8. If you switch to shoes with less cushioning, give yourself weeks to get adjusted to them by wearing your old shoes for at least half of your runs for a while, and depending on how little cushioning they have, you may need to only wear the new, less cushioned shoes for a couple of tenths of a mile at a time, gradually building up. 9, do not run with your toes lifted. This alone causes stress to the muscles of your shin. 10, wear compression socks or calf sleeves for long runs or intense training, i.e. speed work. 11, consider shoes with less drop. I have become a personal fan of Altra shoes, but other brands are offering shoes with zero drop or low drop as well. A low drop will encourage good form, but shoes are quite individual. Be careful with any shoe change and get your gait analyzed by an expert, a real expert. 12, study running form videos and get a friend to shoot video of you running, and strive for high cadence, short steps, and light steps. Loud steps mean pounding. A stronger core will help you keep light on your feet. Planks are my favorite core exercise. Make this part of your daily routine. That's all for today. Please go to the website and watch the videos I link to in the show notes, because it's as true here as anywhere. A picture is worth 1,000 words, and a video must be worth 10,000 words. Today I want to close with a quote from one of the listeners to this podcast, Larry Porchline. Larry posted this on the Mojo for Running Facebook page, and I just love it. In answer to my question, why do you run, he said, because I want to make the second half of my life healthier than the first. That is the best answer I've ever heard. Thanks, Larry.